All right. Councillors, welcome to the council meeting for Wednesday the 19th of January, our first council meeting of the new term. Congratulations to all and look forward to working productively throughout the council term. So this meeting is being webcast and those in attendance should refrain from making any defamatory statements. Item one on the business paper is apologies and requests for leave of absence. Do you have any? Oh, sorry, yeah. I was going to get down to the visitor part. Yeah, okay. Item two, declarations of items of peculiar and other interest. Do you have any? No? And at this point, I would ask Councillor Cornwall McLean to do an acknowledgement of the country, please.
Thank you, Mayor. We acknowledge the original inhabitants whose country you are gathered on, and we pay respect to the elders past, present and future, and extend respect to all First Nations peoples.
Thank you for that. Item three, visitors. We don't have any visitors attending. Item four, confirmation of the minutes. Recommendation of the minutes of the ordinary council meeting held on the council chambers on Wednesday the 17th of November 2021, and the minutes of the extraordinary meeting held in Tuesday, the 11th of January, to be confirmed. Can I have a move in a second? Move Councillor Mayor, second Councillor Taylor.
I don't think Councillor Mayor can do the 17th of November.
The recommendations on this business paper. You don't have to be in attendance.
To confirm the minutes.
Yeah, they're on the paper. We've read them.
How can you confirm the minutes? How can she, even if she's read the minutes and she wasn't there, how can she compare?
All Councillor Nate's doing.
Confirm the record of the minutes.
He's moving a motion that the council as a whole adopts the minutes.
All those in favour? Again?
I know at
local level when we do, you know, minutes of different organisations, you know, if you weren't present or present, then it's a bit hard to move the minutes through there, but this is obviously a different forum. Item five, mayoral minutes. There is none. Item six, notice of motion. And item seven is items for resolution. Welcome to John. Welcome. This is your first meeting, isn't it?
It is
indeed. Yeah. How long have you been on staff for at SRN now?
6 months.
6 months, there you go. Well, we look forward to having a good relationship with you going forward and mate's looking after you. Put you up the front there.
that is normally where our
press is. Yeah. We don't have a microphone, sorry for you. Can use mine, Matt. Item 7.1, Council Action List Report. The recommendation that the Council receives and note the Council Action List Report. Move in the seconder. Councillor Taylor, second Councillor Cornwall McLean. Is there any comment around the action list?
Just a comment. How long do the complete ones stay there?
Okay. All those in favour? Again? Okay, thank you. 7.2 financial accounts. The recommendation that receives the financial statement, bank reconciliation certificate, and petty cash book made up to the 30th of November 2021 and 31st of December 2021. Confirm the accounts paid as warrant number 1121, totaling $1,956,370.52, and warrant number 1221, totaling $3,160,726.48. Note the report on the November investments is attached in Appendix 7.2-A, and note the report on the December investments is attached in Appendix 7.2-3. I'll be moving the seconder. Councillor Ronson, second. Councillor Knott. Any questions can be directed through to the Deputy CEO if you have any.
Is this where we would discuss about the, where the investments are and how they were considered?
Yeah,
Because I was just noticing that the types of businesses have changed. Have you broadened that net to other facilities, or is there a rule around where you're allowed to invest?
There are some strict rules, but there's some we're reasonably conservative with our investment strategy. We have an investment policy and strategy, which licensed a lot of these, which means people. But yeah, we can go broader, we don't need to invest, we can broaden our base beyond term deposits. We haven't managed to discount being reasonably conservative so far. There are quite heavy restrictions of what we can invest in that. From the DSC, we have a lot of councils who invest in their obligations, CDOs, and a lot of them want a lot of money, which is why they fight the net. But yes, absolutely, we can certainly look at working out that. Happy to bring a paper on that for future SGW if you like.
Yes, well, just in the current environment, there are probably better value outside of the list you've given here.
That's correct at all.
This Imperial Markets.
Mm-hmm.
Is you finding that beneficial?
No, yes, absolutely. They're providing those reports for us for start, which is useful.
Yeah.
They're certainly, back to September, at this point, they're keen to see us broaden our investment base too.
So how much does that cost you?
I think it costs us
I don't think it's a good report myself.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, I don't know what else is available, but, I read a bit of this, and it'll be a recommendation half the time. I really just don't know where they're coming from.
I'll take that feedback back to the finance manager. But they're quite useful in terms of helping us manage the portfolio as a whole. But, yeah, I'm certainly happy to bring options back to our future direction. Beforehand is the drawing in the house, which was the administrative way. Then we ratcheted our CDs down a little bit before we had about 20. We tried to roll them up into one because where someone was being half their time was taking up CDs and sending them over. We did at one stage have money invested with a thing called New South Wales and a managed fund. And again, even that returns were free at the time, and it wasn't great in this administration mode as well. But absolutely, we can look all of these people.
It's quite, you read the November and December, there's not much security, they're just, copies for 10 grand, I would expect a little bit more.
It's not just the reports that Dr. Singh there, they do other work.
Yeah, I agree.
I will bring up a report to the future SGW area. And certainly if we've got some time at the corporate workshop in March, we can present a bit more on our investment strategy as well as well.
Good. Any further questions? If not, I'll put the recommendation. All those in favour? Against? That's carried. Thank you.
Yes,
7.3, Aerojane Strategic Plan, request for review, recommendation the Council provide $15,000 for the 2023-2024 budget to review the Aerojane Strategic Plan. I'll have a mover and a seconder. Move Councillor Payne, second Councillor Taylor. Any comment?
It's going to come out, the 15 grand is going to come out of the budget. Why isn't it coming out of the fund you set aside for the aerodrome? I would have thought, we put 50 grand a year into that. If I want a strategic plan, take the money out of that rather than pull it out of the general budget.
So when we're referring it to the budget, we can refer to the budget and at that stage make it a 50 to fund it from the reserve. Yeah. So when we're doing the long-term financial plan, or for the 10 years coming up, which we're starting to run now, that will plug into year 2, and we can make the choice then to take that 15,000 from the area transfer.
Can we have like a layout map included in that? So we can get a bit of a layout of the land over there as well with the air zones.
Yeah,
we
can do that now, but when we go to
the strategic plan, then yeah, definitely. Yeah. Given the age of the existing plan, if there was any way of squeezing it in a year earlier, I think that would be preferable. Like, it's, we're talking at 15 years old. 15
years old. And we've done everything on that.
Yeah.
I think it certainly can do a lot of the preliminary work for it can certainly be done as part of the review of the local environment plan and with consideration of some of the new zoning requirements and some and what may also be we'll be needing to look very closely at whether or not there's any plan changes in those high zones because that too will impact on the local environment plan. So a lot of the preliminary work that would go into the development of and the review of the Arizona stage. A lot of that work is going to be done as part of the LAP.
Yeah.
It's just that the LAP review will actually ultimately require to be signed off materially. So therefore, we just want to have that framework in place and being conservative, really, when we're saying that we're definitely making sure that it'll be in the following month, but please be sure that a lot of that work, preliminary work, will be being done as part of the LAP too.
So, they're not necessarily going to start work 2023, some of the green will look like to start. Yeah.
Sorry, just a reminder, councillors and staff, when you make an address, can you just name your title so that the audience know who's talking? Thank you. Councillor Taylor.
Yes. Oh, you've done it for me.
There you go.
My query is just looking at the 2006 plan, there seems to have been some things that have changed since then, and I'm assuming that that's sort of the review. You look at sort of the changes, look at industrial estates where residential land has gone to over those 15 years or whatever. So that will be part of it, right? Yeah, okay.
Just can I
noticed there you sold some blocks there as well. I guess part of the review is what happened to that fund. Does that fund get reinvested there? I think there's also additional plans for making that aircraft, if you like, a more of an expansive possibility as well. Is that, and as well, if there's a timing issue around the plan, is that sort of stuff getting a little bit behind where we're up to, sort of with the, what's happening there? Everything seems to be moving a little bit quickly, you sold a lot of blocks.
Yeah, well, pretty much all the development's been done there. And obviously, it's always been a word of mouth. And you know, when people have moved into that air park, it's there's the demand for the next lot. So we haven't developed anything there for a couple of years now, have we?
I'll just say we are actively engaged with the youth group. So they're taking on board their youth group, and they actually are.
I was more referring to the fact that the current allotments of, I believe, are almost all taken up there.
All gone.
And that if it's to be progressed and we're being held up by or whatever, the review that, as I understand, is also proposes for a further extension to that as well, that we would be missed opportunity potentially by us being a bit slow getting pushing into that. So that's what I'm alluding to. Of course, we want the group to be involved with that process as well, but I just...
Well, if we were able to go early with one family review and say what's all, so give us a reason, know what the requirements set out, it's not just about the aircraft, it's leaving us away from where then we start with something, but it's going to be like a, it won't be a ship process anyway, because it's always been developed, it's going to take a year to plan. So,
yeah, well, I'm sort of aware of that there's a time issue there as well, and in the current environment with low interest rates and people wanting to move out of the city, that perhaps there might be still an opportunity if we're looking to continue to grow that, that we progress that phrase of the timer.
Quickly,
thanks.
That has deputy CEO, just answer council, have you placed on the bump?
Any further questions about that? Any other one? Put the recommendation, all those in favour? Against? Okay, thank you. Next one. 7.4, calls and motions for the National General Assembly. Do we have any motions that we wanted to put up for the National General Assembly? I know we spoke about it the other day, we haven't had a lot of time, but...
Councillors sort of sound a little bit strange. I feel like comrade or something like that. But I was just generally talking to past councillors, particularly with some of the rules and regulations that are being thrust on the council. There seems to be a momentum building for even more red tape and rules around just functioning, which are often driven by city-based councils because of misbehaviour or otherwise. And I just don't see a complaint about that or try and monitor it or by all means. But all these other restrictions seem to be just making even being part of council a difficult thing to attract people to the environment here. And I'm just... I'm just flagging this. I'd love to have more or less red tape if you like. And I know that I realise that that's a rough thing, but I mean, it's just flagging that there seems to be momentum building from what I think. Maybe we could defer to March FCW and allow time there to advise on the 5th March. That's what I said, the first FCW, which is the 2nd of March. No, 2nd of March.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What's that? Oh yeah, well that's what I mean. I'm saying the first one in March that we have, doesn't matter if it's via Zoom or whatever really at the end of the day. Gives us a month and a half to and then gives us a bit of time on that day to work through.
I know it's been one of the appendages. I think it's important. I don't think we have to put a motion for it because it's generally we want to encourage it in. A lot of our funding comes from grants now. You know, we've got to battle with every other one, and I think it's the wrong way that the, we shouldn't be encouraging state government and federal government to go down that finance method in that for how the hell do we budget, we don't know when we're going to get it, how much we're going to get, and you know, it's all political wins, they decide where we've got one on mental health or something, so we comply on that, where you know, our priority might have been somewhere else, right? They should be giving us our funding more traditional means rather than just picking something out of a wind every 6 months and say, right, and then we battle with every other council to get the money. So if someone else, that was just a general one that was pushing, and I think we should really encourage that, because that's your real problem for the council in the future, and you don't want funding, it gets pretty hard to be budgeting or doing anything else.
But
Okay, so someone would like to move that we, or do you want?
Yes. I just bring this in to another area that we'll put out to you support the kind of businesses.
Yep. Hopefully. Yeah, okay, yep. Yeah. Is there anybody in there as well? Yep, definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you. If we had a bit more time, we could workshop it today. So, somebody like to move that we hold a discussion around motions for the National General Assembly at our March 5th strategy and policy. Councillor Taylor, Assistant Councillor Payne.
Is that going to be enough time though?
Well, it's 25 days. You only got.
I've just got to put them into words and say, yeah.
What the motion is. It's not going to be a lot of
money. We've got to train the mayor up to present it, mate.
You put me under strict situations when I went last time, so I didn't come back around and good that I wasn't to go again. So. yeah, okay, so all those in favour? Against, carry. Won't be too hard to talk on labour shortages and small business.
Won't get any argument from anybody.
No, I don't. 7.5, CEO performance agreement. A recommendation the council confirm the CEO's performance agreement. Has everybody had a chance to have a look at that agreement? That was something that we obviously just workshopped with Steve Blackadder from Blackadder Associates. He's the recruiting officer. And the reason why we didn't confirm it obviously back then is because we wanted the new council to have a look at it and see if there's any parts of that we could pull out or put in. Karina obviously likes to be held to account, so go your hardest there, she says. So did we have any sort of, anybody have any comments on those, Grant? Yes?
The performance agreement's fine, just an observation. Our values and behaviours, I think they could be more contemporary and just flag that as something we could look at. I've seen some really good examples in recent years.
Yeah.
And something to work on for the future.
Okay, somebody would like to move it, the performance concern, or the performance agreement. Councillor Marriott, second Councillor Payne. Any further comment or put the recommendation? All those in favour? Against, carried. Thank you. 7.6, code of conduct and procedures for the administration of the code of conduct. Council recommendation, revoke existing code of conduct and procedures for the administration of the code of conduct. adopt the Bergen Shire Council Code of Conduct attached as 7.6-8. Adopt the Bergen Shire Council procedures for administration of the Code of Conduct attached in 7.63. I'll move in a second that. Councillor Cornwall Queen, second Councillor Nick Nort. Any comments?
This is one of these things where you pretty much got the illusion of choice. You've got to adopt the Code of Conduct. You're free to modify it, but you can't change the thrust of the Code of Conduct, and you can't look at reality what that means. It comes down to discussions about speech threshold, and we wanted to raise the lower that at the moment. So lower $10 to $50 or no gifts at all. And that's about the limit of the discretion you've got.
Councillor Tozer, just a query. Since we're going to have the training over for 2 days in early February, would our discussion about it be better to be left then when we'd have more time? Or?
Yes, certainly you can do that. If we won't change the code of conduct in itself,
yeah.
So it will gain some greater understanding. And once they've just had this conduct to review, there will probably be some changes around the voting anyway, but we're just trying to get these things, because it's so many stuff to review.
I'm not suggesting we don't pass the motion, but I think if we had questions about it, that would be a more appropriate forum, I think.
And certainly, while you're adopting this now, if between now and the next meeting you all decide that you want to review it again, you can use the Code of Conduct at any time as well. It's not set in stone forever. You need to review at least once a term. If you can just pick up once a term, it's done. But as a council, you can always go back in and do it at any time.
Mm-hmm. Any further comments? The recommendation, all those in favour? Okay, thank you. 7-7, clashes of meeting dates.
Everything that happened at once, so it's pretty nice to go. The first, second, the main dates I could book for the 2 day workshop for the induction, because that's when the present is primarily delivered to the speaker. Now, if the Thursday, I felt that was probably a good idea for the tour, because we're all fresh and you'll be able to sort of see what some of the major investment opportunities are around the district. There are some pretty good things coming. But that means that the second, that we would normally have been the central policy work, the graduate policy workshop, so that the first thing I need to decide is about that. The day after, maybe 4 days in a row, I don't know how you first do that, 4 days in a row seems a lot to me. And the other one is the March where we've got our corporate workshop, but there's supposed to be the state conference that's just prior to that, and we were discussing the other day whether it was actually worth it going to that or whether the risk was worth falling to that. So that's a decision for you guys to make for it, and I would just let them know whatever decision you make.
Thank
you. All
right. I suppose the first question is, do we have any want to Zoom these SBW meetings as opposed to coming in person? Because it doesn't worry me either way, like, same deal with the briefing is the same. I mean, we have a think about it for the next meeting, but I mean, we could do the briefing the night before at home, and then come in and start our meetings at 9 o'clock and we're all done by, you know, dinner time, as opposed to doing the briefing on the morning of, taking 2 hours because we're allowed 2 hours, and if we brief only for an hour and 40 minutes, we're in, we've got 20 minutes of late on. And then, obviously, you know, we're still after dinner on a Wednesday or whatever day it is, after lunch, we're still meeting. So, they're the first two questions. Does it matter if we have it on the 4th of February? Is it an issue with 4th of February? Wednesday works for me too, that's the day that I have off. Everybody happy with the Wednesday? Well, we'll just do it tonight, Wednesday night.
The strategic planning, the strategic
policy
workshop, do you want that the Wednesday evening after the training, or do you want to do it
that
week before?
Yeah.
The night? Yep.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm Councillor Commonwealth, I'm not available in the night in the morning.
Okay.
Or we can do it. Yeah, after one I can do.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do that.
I want to hear. No, I'm just going to Zoom again.
Right.
But also, just the 4 days on the side, the less number of days you can do it, but again, more than the 1 day rather
than
stretching it over more days. But you're trying to run a business and you're telling me I've got 4 days off that week. Well,
yeah. The third, obviously, is not much flexibility in the third, but there's a bit on the second, obviously. After the train, we could do it after the train, if that wasn't
possible. Yeah, that is true, but do it on the first and the second, do it.
Keep going there. Well, we could do it before and end of the train.
Start early, well, that suits you better than pulling another day.
Yeah, fair enough.
Anything that comes out there to be done with time, that's actually the day we're probably trying to do it, so it's
going
to make it
any harder. No, so we'll go back, we'll do it on the second. Okay. Second, Wednesday the second. Well, we can do it. 2 o'clock. Is that true? Because we're going to have training in the morning, aren't we?
If we do it quickly.
Well, there's another person delivering, but you could get to it faster than. So I'll as soon as it finishes and starts.
Quicker to get in. Not too many questions.
So I'm sorry, I just can't tell you when that will start.
No, that's all right. We'll log it in for 2 o'clock on the.
Thank you. A couple of comments. Just Councillor Taylor. Just in relation to this, particularly this week in February, there is a lot to it, but that's not going to be repeated in future months. It's all about really the induction, which has got to happen at some point. And I think, I don't know what the other councils feel, but I find it's good to have sort of a consistent time, whatever that time is, so that, you know, people can plan, people can organise what they've got to do rather than sort of chopping and changing times. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm getting older, but I'd like to have process because I'll forget things unless it's sort of ingrained.
But this isn't a extenuating circumstance.
Yeah.
But in February, you'll be setting all of your council
meetings going
forward, so you'll have
a date. Okay. Right, so we're locked down for 2 o'clock on the 2nd of February.
Yes, and then it's the.
And Yeah, and then the conference. Well, look, I mean, if you listen to one epidemiologist and then you listen to the next, we're about to hit the peak and come down from the peak. So I don't know whether or not we should be canning the local government conference yet. I realise that, but being that it's a month away at least. Are they offering online as well? We'd have to leave on the 28th for the first. So we'd have to leave on Monday to do the first, because obviously the first is 9 o'clock start. And I don't ever want to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know if they're fired all day at 4 o'clock in the morning. But so unless anybody really wants to go, maybe we should just, if you need an answer today, maybe we should just end. Does anybody really want to attend? Obviously, the Deputy Mayor said she can't attend. And is it, it's going to be, as you said, 4 days for anybody, but it's going to be 5 or 6 for us if we go to there as well and then back up to Nolima. So, if anybody really thinks that we should be represented at this meeting?
Councillor Colin McKean, if it wasn't for the COVID thing, I'd be keen.
Yep.
That's my absolute concern, and I've got the time that week.
Mm-hmm.
We can delay the call.
Well,
who knows what's happening in September?
Yeah. That's right. So maybe what we could do is maybe we could send an email to LG New South Wales to see if they're going to live stream the event, and maybe then we can have some councillors that have time that day or the 2 days to live stream and have that. All good?
The most important part
of it
is the networking.
Yeah, that's correct. But do you want the network to play from the blue
line?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Oh, look, as I said, it's an important part of the journey of the council. There's no two ways about that. But in these times, and because we've obviously lagged the workshop on the back, we're probably better off in our own company at this stage, aren't we?
Guarantee the conferences is boring as well. You get the one from the city, get up and just waffle on.
That's all part of the induction in the local government council. Hey, always got a good family. Okay, so are we happy to if we've got any motions, we will. When do they need to be involved?
The conference for the health stuff
Correct. All right. So then you just need, because I think Jack had already tentatively booked accommodation and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
good. All right. So somebody like to move that we don't attend. Somebody like to, if you want to, you don't probably need to stand. They can stay. Well, that's the same date, so we can stay. If somebody likes to move that we don't attend the local government conference on March 1 and 2.
Yeah,
Councillor Carver, second Councillor Murray. All those in favour? Against, carried.
Okay. So yes, we are moving
the SPW to 2 o'clock.
And that's
all
that one resolution.
Yes, that's it. 7-8, unsolicited proposal, take more caravans park.
No, that's not
it's
likely to be the second. It's usually the first Wednesday of the month.
Yeah.
Unsolicited proposal, Tote Moor Caravan Park lease extension. We're looking for some direction here.
Councillor Taylor, could I? I've just got some points. I think the first thing we need to perhaps consider is whether we are of a mind to do it or not, and there might be a variety of reasons. I have some reasons why we might consider doing it. The first point is COVID. Caravan parks, probably as much as any place that suffered from those things. There was a lot of news when COVID came out that there was an indication that landlords should assist. I'm not sure whether we did assist these people or whether they just paid their rent through that time, but it's been a difficult time. So you might think out of, if you look at them, say, asking for a further 5 years, well, I may have lost 2 years already. So in a sense, I think that's worthy of consideration. Whether they have some inclination to sell in the future, that's speculation. We don't know that. But I'd ask the question just from a commercial point of view, whether it would be better to have a caravan park that has a lease that attracts new enthusiastic people if the people wanted to get out, or encourages the people that are there to continue to invest in it, rather than somebody struggling to hang on because they're not sure that they want to be there. The next thing that I had is, we could ask, I suppose, with sort of a mutual benefit, that we ask them to do some improvements in lieu of that. The other thing that I'd say is that we aren't really giving, if we give someone 5 years further term, they're not getting it for free. They pay for the 5 years. So it's not all one way. I just think, you know, we have a desire to help or to encourage businesses to come to the area, but we also want to strengthen the businesses that we have. And although we have responsibility for this caravan park, I'm not sure that we want to be the ones that we've had plenty of examples in the past. So they're the reasons why I think that we should consider trying to resolve it and in a mutually beneficial way.
Councillor McLean?
I think that I'm wanting to look at changing the answers a little bit here. So we've got a situation where a lessee has asked for an extra 5 years on the existing lease. We've got advice that the existing lease doesn't allow for that we would therefore need to look at an option of a 20-year lease. And that the normal course would be you would go to tender and that would be a competitive process. But there is an exception to that, and that is the unsolicited proposal exception, and there is a guide which is in our papers. Now, the guide requires that it needs to be unique, and it needs to be done for money, and then unique is not just the offering, it's the offeror, and there's a whole lot of criteria there. So what we have right now doesn't meet that. That's a no-brainer. But we could, if we were minded, invite them to present something that meets that guidance. And I think that's the pathway in the narrative of the story.
Councillor Hayden?
Have you, what sort of communication have you had with Claire? Has it just been arrived here and just sort of I'm assuming we haven't had the discussion around the current rules that apply to redoing the lease.
I have spoken with Claire and the grant and but they initially came to see me after that lease. I was of a mind that perhaps if we could get it to a 3-star rating, I'd make sure that there was a plan for that to happen, and that might be possible. So I've been out with the caravan and tasks to work out, you know, what process that might take. It's not my decision though, that's the most important part. So I wasn't sure then where that's why I'm in council's direction, because whichever way we want to go is what I would have to implement, and she is aware that there are some fairly specific requirements around unsolicited proposals. And I do let them know that it's coming to council for the decision, because it's not mine today. If we want to go with extending and there's a whole administrative process that happens, and it's a table all the time. But we would have to have all of those ducks in a row for the unsolicited proposal to go to the minister as being actually a ministerial approval that we're applying for the strong year statement. So that's a very complex
The 3-star is just a mention that there's a possibility rather than a necessity at the moment. Currently, it's a 2-star.
It's not
star.
No star.
Because why I was mentioning that was that we just the thought being rental being really difficult at the moment, including another rigor behind what might will be available might force the price to be out of the current space, which is a tough space. I don't know the details, I don't know what they charge or anything like that, but I'm just mindful there that as soon as you start pushing up the scale, I think it's been.
It is something that's been highlighted through Joe's work as well, and Maren's work, is that our accommodation offerings in the Berrigan Shire are quite poor. We're building this infrastructure and we're encouraging people to come here, but we don't then have the facilities for people to stay in, right? Is this caravan park, has it got accessibility for people with disabilities? I'm not quite sure. I think it's what Julie's saying, is options there to bring the caravan park leases into the conversation and say, look, these are some of the things that we think should happen, and we're happy to work with you with that situation. Because, as I said, we've identified at a workshop probably 12 months ago, and we all knew it, but when you actually sit down and work through the process, that we do have outside business probably. It's been, you know, I was at the Baruga the other day, and no disrespect to Baruga at all, but there wasn't one person parked at the motel, and I don't know whether that's because everybody's gone home, but the comments to me were, geez, they look old and stuff like that. So I think, you know, getting into the negotiation doesn't mean that we're going to, you know, that's going to be our outcome, but I think it's a good place for us to be into that negotiation if we're going to extend that 20-year lease and you know, somebody not coming to take over too, obviously. You've got to have time to sell, haven't you?
Well, I guess the other thing was what's happened for eyes as a current team being there. I think there were some issues with trying to get somebody in there at one stage.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I will need to find out the legality of selling a lease if we are the family manager, so I'm not sure if that's
we already have the not selling it here, where you're simply leasing out the property, which you've already done, so that's not.
But we've got your game with the person.
Yeah, but the lease on the document, if you don't mind, my hand and deputy CEO, the lease itself says the lessee must not sublet, assign, or part with possession of the premises or any part of them without the consent of the lessor, which is us and the Crown. The lessor would unreasonably withhold it. They need our permission. We can't unleash if we
lost.
It's not in the ground.
Absolutely.
Does this set a precedent for anything, any other decisions we have to make around the show? Is it all one off?
Oh,
I'm not talking about this caravan. I'm just talking about any other Crown Land facilities. I don't know, that's what I'm asking.
You've built a new building in Tokyo on Crown Land?
Yeah.
So, you're looking there, that's one of the reasons why the list your building there are under 5 years, so that you don't have to go through the owner.
So, a 15-year caravan lease versus a 20-year, what financial difference are we talking? Anyone
else? It's a year thing, basically.
Yeah, I know. Well, what are we talking? Tens of thousands? Hundreds of dollars?
No, it'll be based on the history. You'll have records of who stayed there and how much money they've earned, and that sort of stuff. I think we'll be basing it on income potential.
And capital pain, I think, for the last 2.5 years of COVID, I think they've probably struggled quite a little bit with travel and people coming to stay. But other than that, we want to know about is Dad Timeshare and who owns the buildings and how it's up, as well as different tenants we've gone back to verbally requested extensions. They just emailed their intentions for that transparency reason as well. But they definitely need to know.
I don't know if there would be a financial gain really with the loss of the finances, but I have a board of the finances, so to see how it benefits them. So the easiest thing would be just to leave the 15 years, and then they can trade it as a normal caravan. Options, in which case they don't necessarily have to go through all the business they're going through potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an easy outcome, but it's just not for 20 years.
Thank you, Mayor. I think look, it's a high bar to get an unsolicited proposal above. It's a lot of work for the proponent. They may not even want to do it, so to go to your point, Councillor Haddon, you could leave the option with them. They can come forward with an unlisted solicited proposal any day of the week, and we need to determine whether we like it or we don't.
Thanks for the time again. One of my concerns, and it's probably a general concern, in some ways, unsolicited proposal or request, just in general terms, it seems to me contrary to the idea that we want to encourage people to come forward and speak to us. And look, I deal with commercial leases frequently, and you know, it's not uncommon for in the private sector for people to come and ask for, and this is a commercial business. So I mean, that's why I asked the question, and I understand the kind of restraints in this situation, but if we go back a step and say, well, what do we want to do, and then see whether it can be navigated between the parties along, I think that that's sort of the course that we ought to take, because frankly, if you ask me, do we want to have a situation, because at some point someone is going to want a new lease. And generally, they don't leave it till the last day to apply for a new lease if there's no option available. And why wouldn't it be a good consideration to at least have the discussion now and look at how that might be done?
Any other comments?
Councillor May, I just wanted to support what John was saying as well, and maybe if we show that the relationship between leasee and leasor is strong, the person who might step into the 15-year lease knows that the possibility of extending that lease is quite likely. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? It's building a good foundation there so that they might buy the 15 knowing it could be extended when the time comes and kicking this down the road.
So for the most part, I was going to say that for me, I would like to say it's good to get them to speak to council or just that I need to start working with them on their own solicitor's proposal so they can sort of propose it to you.
I think trial assistance on a proposal would be much appreciated, I suspect, because businesses, when they're talking the talk, struggle with the government speech,
yep,
and how to present, and I think that would be a huge.
Did you want to move something to that?
Look, I guess the motion that would be that the CEO have discussions with the proposer as to how a suitable proposal might be put forward to council for consideration.
Mm-hmm. I have moved Councillor Carr second. Councillor McNaught. Do you want to just read that back?
I'll just the CEO is to work with the proponent to develop their proposal to council.
Any further comment on the matter? Put the recommendation, all those in favour? Against, carries. Thank you. Item 9, induction and professional development policy. So, there was a couple of copies of myself, Councillor Reynolds and Councillor Taylor's professional development in the attendance. Everybody get an opportunity to have a look at those? Michelle will work one-on-one. Is that you'll work one-on-one? Yeah, okay. Well, Michelle did it with this last time. That's why I made no reference to that. So, so if the paragraph there around the webinar is commencing the 6th of February, hey?
Oh, no, that's
not February yet.
No, it's not.
It's a month away yet. have we had an opportunity to think about those for start? Because I guarantee you, there's not going to be a convenient time, are they? So that's the morning. What's that?
What's the matter?
Yeah. Some of this professional development is essential.
Do the essential stuff.
Do the essential.
Yeah. And then your interests come next, and then you.
So we'll sign off a lot of the essentials at your induction program. So things around code of conduct, understanding financial reports, those things will be done at the induction, and a lot more will also be done at the corporate workshop, so they'll be part of that strategic planning stuff there. So that's, I know it's chunking it all into once, but a lot of the essential stuff will be covered in those 2 or 4 days.
Yeah. I'm sure there's fascinating courses or whatever, but I'm just getting railroaded into certain things that sort of bothers me a little bit.
Now, is it up to you how much special development
that you want to do? Yeah, 5, 10 times I stand for the Board of Elder in New South Wales, Ted. Well, then maybe you probably should have done some professional development. They're going to hold you to account when they vote for you, but other than that, I think that the necessity stuff is probably.
At this stage, it's very unlikely.
Okay, so. Sorry, look.
Well, I'll send out an email after this, and I've got a couple of days set aside because I have to pre-plan my schedule, otherwise it just fills up. I've got a couple of days where I've set aside, and one of them is actually a Wednesday, and the fact that there's so that we can sort of start to have that conversation for an hour with each of you, and see if we can start to deal with that.
Just a minor query in relation to the Council on Induction and Professional Development policy put forward. Section 12 references vaccination records. I think that could be an error. I'm not sure why that's in there.
Is that?
Oh no, there's
nothing. It didn't mention a requirement, and so I was a bit
That part of staff.
That's what I thought.
Come off the staff one.
It'll come off on the staff, yeah, sorry. So we will remove that reference section 12.
Alright, so I'd like to move that we individually as councillors set aside the time to meet with Karina around training that we would like to undertake, and also, I mean, is it a commitment? I mean, we can just access these webinars with our own pay channel, so we don't need to really move anything around that.
No, that was letting you know what's available.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah. Right.
So,
if you just let me know what you've done, that would be because it was there, because they actually do that. Yes, good. Somebody would like to move that? Councillor Marriott, second. Councillor Cornwall, please. All those in favour? Against? Carried. Thank you. 7.10, designation of superintendent. Recommendation that the council confirm the superintendent for both the Coast Offshore Building and Baruga and Timmy Water Treatment Plan upgrades are moved to the Director of Infrastructure as previous decisions of the council. Obviously, Ralph's going to take that over now. Can I have a move in a second? It's quite straightforward. Councillor Carroll, second. Councillor Ellison, all those in favour? Against? Carried. Thank you.
Does that mean Max finish now? Is he still carrying up at all?
No, I think he's finished.
That's
part of that. Fully integrated back into Ireland. Yeah.
and barely
hard enough to understand here, let alone over there, and even over there, and through late in that year. 7-Eleven, purchase of 11 Baruga Street, Kokomo. Recommendation that the council endorse the action of the chief executive officer regarding the purchase of 11 Baruga Street, Kokomo. Delegate authority to the mayor and chief executive officer to sign, under seal, all relevant documentation relating to the purchase of property. Have a move in a second. Councillor Taylor, second. Councillor Payne, any comment or questions?
I'm sorry, I
just said it's not
something I would normally do,
right,
just I had no council at the time, and I knew it was on
council
to
plan,
so thank you.
What's that now? all those in favour?
Against?
Carried. Thank you.
Yeah.
7-12, Pokemon Visitor Information Centre. Recommendation the council operates an accredited visitor information centre in the Pokemon Foreshore building, staffed by council employees and volunteers. Part 2, that the council allocates a budget for employment of a visitor service officer, 2 times part time equals 1 full time equivalent, and the initial setup and the ongoing operations and maintenance of the VIC. Yeah, I think there's morning tea here. What impression have we set?
All comes back to the mayor, you know.
I got rabbited from Councillor Glanville every week about this. Every meeting. I'm happy to have a 15-minute break then, because and reconvene at 10:30. Yeah, all right. Okay. Happy to do that. All
right.
And 7.12, Pokemon Visitor Information Centre. As per the recommendation is read out, rather move in a second if the recommendation.
For the
7.12, yes. Yep.
Have we talked
about that? No, but we'll get a move in a second, then we'll discuss. If we don't get a move in a second, then we can obviously, the motion will last. Yeah.
I'll move it.
Councillor Queen, second. Councillor Hattie. Discussion. Would you like to hear from our Economic Industry Development Liaison first? Okay, Maren, I hand the floor to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time this morning to go through the recommendations that are relating to the Postmore Visitor Information Centre. When I was sitting down yesterday just to think a little bit about this presentation that I was going to talk to you about, I realised that actually yesterday, 12 months ago yesterday, the New South Wales-Victorian border reopened after that shocking and really shocking closure that we all experienced on the 31st of December. And I was just reflecting on the fact that in that week prior to that actually happening, I spent two industry forums that Susan Lee came and attended and just listened with absolute heartbreak to the things that had happened to our tourism industry people in Baruga and Postmore, especially. We had people that were just on the verge of tears, and it was just heartbreaking. I was really quite emotionally affected by the whole thing that we witnessed that day with these two forums that just went on for hours and hours of people talking about their experiences, and it gave us an incredible understanding of where we actually sat, and it started a journey, I think, that this council's been on all year in really just coming to grips with what actually happened to our visitor economy in the past 12 months. So that's just my little bit of reflection on where we were this time last year and where we're actually headed for better pastures in the coming 12 months, I suppose, because obviously at this time last year we didn't realise also that we had further lockdown times. So with the recommendations that I've made, I think that probably what I'd like to do is to just go through a service review that we've done, and which is only a strategic assessment of where we are currently with our visitor services. And just touch on a few points that I believe that are relevant as far as the Visitor Information Centre goes. I would like to make one point in all of this discussion. We talk about a Visitor Information Centre, which is a physical thing. But really what I would like to always think about when we talk about it is that it's visitor servicing. So it's not just about the walk-in traffic. It's about how we service the visitor in their dreaming phase and they're thinking about coming here. When we've got them on the road on their way here, so it's about how we use social media, how we're using other sorts of websites, how are we encouraging our industry to respond to TripAdvisor and to Google and all of these different things that are out there now. Yes, we still have a visitor centre, and in the discussion that I just had with Councillor Taylor, we were talking about how probably 10 years ago we were all assuming that visitor centres were going to be a thing of the past. Well, we know that they're not a thing of the past. People still like to use them. People still really like that physical contact. But there really is a much, much bigger picture to visit than the actual centre. And it really is about how we serve the visitor, and especially, I think, in the COVID years to come at the moment, is how we service and talk to and encourage new visitation. Because I think that our traditional visitor is going to change. We will still have a very strong visiting friends and relatives market that will never go away. But with the moves that are put through National Parks and Wildlife Service as far as restrictions on camping, that with those sorts of, we will have a transition of a different type of person visiting this area. And also we need to be looking at people coming to us from different areas. One of the things that I think border closures showed us very, very clearly is that our dependence on Melbourne and regional Victorian visitors, whilst it's a great city and it won't go away, we need to look north of ourselves as well to make sure that we start to encourage visitation to this area from other areas. Right off the track then. I'm sorry, I can tend to when I start talking about those sorts of things. So going back to the strategic assessment that led to the report that I've written for you, and as a quick reminder, the strategic assessment is not an operational assessment. So the current visitor services that are council funded and run are the digital platform,
that we share in conjunction with Morningside Council under the heading of One Country on the Murray. And the digital platform is authored by Murray Regional Tourism, which is our cross-border tourism, regional tourism board.
Am I on board?
And yes, Karina is a New South Wales local government representative to the Murray Regional Tourism Board. We also are responsible for the design, print and of the official visitor guide. That is a relatively new function that the council has taken on, but we certainly have now had the one that we have at the moment in the marketplace for close to 18 months. We're also responsible at the moment for a marketing campaign and collateral based around the official visitor guide. And we also have a Live, Work, Invest in Buried and Shire program, especially a short video program that I don't know if anybody's had a look through our YouTube, but we certainly keep very active in that space. So the Visitor Information Centre, which is probably what I call the last touch point when you're looking at the marketing and the collateral that we have, is the soft front of the Visitor Information Centre, which is authored by the Tasmore Chamber of Commerce and Tourism. And as per our current tourism strategy, the council guides internet and phone connection for the Tasmore Chamber of Commerce. We provide familiar tours and training for the VIC volunteers, so we take them around the district on bus tours and make sure that they are familiar with all of the different products that are there. And in our first quarter budget, the council also paid for the rent of the current premises as per its agreement with the Tasmanian Chamber of Commerce. So in going through this assessment, what the key thing is what was the business problem that we needed to address? And I really came to the conclusion that there were two main problems that needed to be addressed. I think the fragmentation of the way that the functions are is probably one of the key issues. So that the council is providing, at the moment, the marketing, it's providing the visitor guide, so it's providing the collateral, it's providing the digital platform, and from that comes our relationships that we have, our strategic relationships with Murray Regional Tourism Board, Destination Riverina Murray, which is the state government, New South Wales state government, local representation, but also our relationships that we have directly with Destination New South Wales. We have all of these different things, and then we get to the point where we need and want to have contact with the visitor, and then we don't have that contact. And we hand the responsibility of that contact to the Tasmanian Chamber of Commerce and also to the volunteers who are operating the Visitor Information Centre. So that fragmentation and that disconnect is probably one of the main business problems that really needed to be addressed. The other one, of course, is recognising the significant impact of COVID-19, the border closures, the business disruptions over the past 2 years. And I think that obviously, the hospitality and the visitor economy is the one thing that has had the most severe impact for this region. And we do need to recognise that it is our second highest employing industry, obviously behind agriculture. Just a few other points I think we need to really think about is that we don't have any, there's no legislative or mandated requirement for the council to do anything in this space, and is not likely to be in the foreseeable future. I think, however, we need to think about our current economic development and tourism strategies, where we do have the council's stated priorities in this area of product development, events and regional promotion. And also that that then takes us up into our regional and state priorities. And the regional priorities of working with Destination Riverina Murray and the Murray Regional Tourism Board. I think the state and Commonwealth priorities, will state more so than the Commonwealth, the New South Wales Digital Economy Strategy for 2030, sets a target now to triple 2009 overnight visitor expenditure in New South Wales by 2030. And that's surpassing any of the previous targets, despite the recent challenges that we face. So their initial one for 2020 was to double, and now they're looking to triple the actual visitor economy. So that certainly indicates that there's an enormous amount of state backing for any of us who are working in this space in the digital economy. One of the questions that we addressed was what is the funding and governance model for visitor information centres throughout New South Wales, and there's probably some interesting statistics for you around this. And also to talk about, when we're talking about the visitor centres in New South Wales, we're talking about visitor centres that are accredited with the state government with Destination New South Wales. An accredited visitor information centre, and this whole accreditation process is outsourced by Destination New South Wales to a group called the Tourism Group, and they do that for Queensland as well as New South Wales. There are 114 accredited VICs in New South Wales, and 97 of those are council owned and operated. Two are owned and operated by Clubs New South Wales, and not by the main thing, but two clubs. One is Houston, and I'm sorry off the top of my head, I can't remember the other one, but there are two that Clubs New South Wales actually run a visitor information centre. Two are run by National Parks and Wildlife Service. 10 are run by local tourism associations, funded or partly funded by the local council. One is run by a Chamber of Commerce. One is an art gallery, and one is the Dolphin Centre in Cox Harbour. So there's a large spread there, but obviously predominantly visitor information centres, and the accredited ones are owned and operated by councils. In running this assessment, we also considered what functions could or should be delivered outside the council. And I think it's a fairly easy to come to the conclusion that most of these operations could be operated outside council. But the second question to that is, does our area especially have the capacity and capability for those sorts of functions to revive within the private sector? And I think that that's where we came to a conclusion, especially with such a volunteer base with the Coastal Chamber of Commerce, that there was reduced capacity, I would say, to actually be able to deliver on all of these things, and especially around the digital platform, especially around social media. And working with, as I said, keeping our businesses abreast of things like TripAdvisor and how to work with TripAdvisor, how to work with Google and Google reviews. I think we've got, it doesn't take too many searches to find that there's a lot of information out there that our local business operators are not responding to. Probably are unaware that a lot of the Google reviews and the TripAdvisor reviews are even sitting out there on the web for people to see and not being responded to. So that's probably also looking at us taking some sort of responsibility in assisting our businesses with understanding how they can actually work with those sorts of mediums. So as I said earlier, I believe that the current model that we're working with is fragmented, and that we're unable to respond to change in planning and delivery of visitor services, and especially in the social media space. And another space that's starting to really start to those places, I suppose, in cities and major regional centres, and they'll obviously start moving out into that area, is augmented reality. A lot of augmented reality projects are now, probably the few that have been run as pilot programs along the Murray. But I can see that if we don't start getting our foot in the door in this sort of space, we're going to get left behind very quickly. Just to give you an example, I had a discussion with Mark Francis, who is the CEO of Murray Regional Tourism, when we did the opening of the West Creek Walk, and just the possibilities around augmented reality with our interpretive signage to actually bring those sorts of things to life for people, whether it's through QR coding and lots of different things. So it's not saying that they're out of the area, and I think that there has been a lot of trials of those sorts of things where you try and have a holiday sitting at home, and that's just not where this sort of thing is going, but it's certainly going into how you can actually take an experience that you've already got in the region and then make it even better, because it gives people more information and greater understanding of, as I said, for example, the last piece where you're having to solve those sorts of things. But there's, I think, there's sorts of opportunities here, especially when you look at our natural environment as well, and you think of some of the places that aren't visited so much, like the blowhole, and the, those sorts of places have got sort of endless opportunities when you start to think around those sorts of things.
God rest past councillor Liz McLaren, but I went to the blowhole yesterday, Liz. That's serious, I did.
Some of the things that happen in other jurisdictions around, like, you know, when you've got kids, the things can set up like a game centre so that they're not so bored while you're looking around.
The blowhole,
yeah. But they've got to collect points and things like that, and that's it a little bit more interactive. So that's when they start this
There's lots of possibilities. You can put a mirror on the wall and you can phone, QR your phone into it, and it'll show, you know, it just looks like a pain that'll actually move. And
okay.
Yeah, so we have discussed it a couple of years ago, but yeah, it's something that obviously is growing wings across the
space. I'm assuming we have a huge budget for
that. Oh, look, Maren's got plenty.
Well, not really, but not your partner, Mr. Watson.
Yeah.
And I think that especially really highlights the importance of our relationships that we have with our regional bodies, with Destination Riverina Murray, Murray Region Tourism Board, and Destination New South Wales. And also sometimes by default, River Victoria as well, which is the state government for their tourism arm, just because of our cross-border relationships.
And maybe now and there, this is the reason why we shifted away from the visitor information as a funding and went into amenity and infrastructure. And I mean, that's the same, that's a government act, isn't it? Like, you spend $100,000 on telling people when they get here what to do, or you put that $100,000 into stuff that actually they can see and do when they get here. So that's always been the challenge with us as a council, is to go, well, we're not really tourist providers or operators. However, you know, we joined the Sun Country on the Murray, like Cobham were putting in $1 million a year, we were putting in 60 or 70, you know, we'll get the dovetail off the back of it a bit, but you know, this is going back 5 or 10 years ago, and then obviously we moved away from it, the visit information, and went to the volunteer based setup, provided, you know, infrastructure, amenity, you know, all that was done over. And now, as Maren's brought this back again now, is that the economy's changed again, the visitor economy's changed again because of the fact that everybody's staying in country now. The majority of people are staying in their own state. Well, it was evident when I drove around Cobram, Baruga and Tokemall just 2 days ago. It didn't look like anybody around. And we're all in the mix for highlighting or exposing our area. So how do we do that to the best of our ability? How do we do that to make sure that the message is getting out that, you know, if you come to Tokemall, there's more than just a river to serve Tokemall. Yeah, so those sort of things, and that's obviously why we're back here at this point. So, just a quick, have you finished now, sorry?
Also, Yes, but I can see we're sort of looking at it.
No, that's okay.
I certainly would be very happy to take questions. I think that it is a very complex issue. I understand that, but I think that I'm more than happy to take questions from the floor.
If I could just add the first one, Maren. So does the visitor define between the accreditation and non-accreditation for a start? Like, does a visitor go, yep, I'm going to that because it's accredited and I know I'm going to get the right information, or I'm happy to go to the general store in Baruda and get information from the person who's actually on the ground and knows, you know, a bit of labelling, so to speak?
There is definitely a recognition of the accredited pipeline. It's nationwide, it's not just in South Wales.
Yep.
And I think that now that sign very much, or that logo, that symbol, very much says to somebody, you don't find the visitor centre open, and you will certainly find certain business standards within that centre that you know what you are going to find. So yes, I believe that very strongly.
And just a further question to that, does it determine the visitor spend as well?
Does it determine the visitor spend? The whole idea of your accredited visitor information centre is that they spend the length of stay.
Yeah.
That they have the training and the skills and access to the collateral that they can continue to, you know, give the information that brings people back or causes them to stay longer.
Okay.
Councillor Hattie, one of the issues, I guess, that I think you sort of alluded to there, the fragmented or not, the history behind the Tasmore Centre has been a bit of a list of fragmentation, I suppose, as far as personalities, I think, been a bit of an issue there. And the potential proposal of having people paid by the trial as a possibility. I thought the Shire did that at one stage, and that wasn't well received, or there was a, I guess I'm asking about the history of how we got to this point, because there's no use revisiting what perhaps hasn't worked previously, because I suspect a lot of the state folks are still around and involved in some way or other, unless there's starting a clean slate. And
well, there's two points to that, Maren, isn't there? Like, one, we never had the infrastructure or the amenity to sell a visitor to for a start. And back then, obviously, we did have a paid visitor information. It was probably started more for the council, so 13 years ago.
Long before that.
There was still a relationship there. We had people in there managing the facility with the Centrelink and that in my team.
They were not paid by council.
They weren't paid by council?
No, the last person that was paid by council was Captain Holton. And Matt, you and I are both new captains. So about 2005, I think, would probably be about the last time that there was a...
About
year before. Helen Landis was prior to that.
Yeah. So when I got here in 2005, which literally, I think, just moved to the new model, where we're basically provided a grant to the Tokemoor Centre of the Visitor, Centre of the Motor Attractions, which was
$80,000
about that, to provide the visitor information to the centre on behalf of
we were paying
this incorporated association,
right.
Which included delegates from each of the chambers and jurors.
So I think that probably the answer to your question is that I think the history of us, of the council having a paid person in there, is a very, very long time ago. And I think that what we probably are trying to come to grips with is how things have changed. So that in some ways that when we were paying somebody back in those times, it's not relevant to the service that we are now wanting to provide. In 2005, we weren't actually doing social media, which is sort of funny to think about now. And really, our websites were incredibly basic as well. So it was still very much the wanting to service the visitor that was standing in front of you, or the person that was ringing you on the phone and saying, could you please send me in the mail, via snail mail, a visitor guide? So I think that the service that we are considering, and that's why I really wanted to stress to you very strongly from the very beginning, whilst we keep talking about a VIC, please keep in mind that it's not just about this physical building, it's about the ability of us to service the visitors and to talk to the visitor and to motivate them to come here through social media and through really good social media that's regular and engaging and visually brave and all of those sorts of things. So we're looking to have some real skills in this area.
Thank you, Ms.
I've got probably four queries, of which I've spoken to you or raised with you now. First thing is, if I take the current situation with the other building, the way the Chamber of Commerce, the Visitor Centre, its recent history, I'm just wondering whether the timing of this is somewhat unfortunate, because there is a prospect of going into somewhat of a firestorm between different people that, you know, may see that we're encroaching on something that they're trying to do or not trying to do. So I'm only saying the timing, and I understand that there are bigger issues here than that, but I'm saying that that is, to me, a concern, that some issue that will need to be dealt with. And how that's best dealt with, I'm not sure. The second thing is it intended, and I take it, although I've read the report and subsequently have spoken to you, and I understand that it's intended that this visitor centre, albeit located in Kokomo, is to be for the benefit of the whole of the council area, because I'm not sure that's not initially what I thought when I read it, and it's perhaps may not be seen by the community. So if it's seen, for example, it's going to have a location in Kokomo, we have a building or whatever, but the function of it is to market and market the whole of the area, that's more attractive than saying, because there is going to be an obvious cost with this, it's going to be an expensive exercise, and if we go down that road, we'll be committed to it. That's where we'll voice out the card and say, we're a visitor centre council. And I guess what I'm asking too is, in relation to how the visitor centre might operate, is it intended that the person that we engage will be very much involved in not just simply the physical provision of information, but be involved in the process of a part of the team as far as marketing and be aware of what's going on elsewhere?
We are still in the process of developing what a position description might look like if we are to go down this track. And certainly it is all about being involved, being the person that is the touch point for saying to that person, oh, you're from Wagga, have you seen that TV commercial? And having those, engaging in those sort of conversations to see whether what we are doing out there is what we do not know. We can certainly have some tools that are giving us a little bit of information about the success of some of the campaigns that we've got out there, but we don't have that absolute connection where you actually can have an opportunity to talk to somebody and see that. So yes, your visitor information services officer would certainly be somebody that is very much engaged around the whole program, not just the delivery of information to somebody walking through the door. That is a much smaller side of it, and it's where I would think we would want to continue to engage the community volunteers, because that's what they are so good at, is that one-on-one talking to people. They love their community, they can impart their community and everything that's so great about it, but they don't want to do all of the other background stuff. They don't want to be bothered reporting the fact that how many people walked through the door that day, where they were from. They don't care about that. But we should care about that, because we're the ones spending the money trying to promote the area. So we need to know that sort of information, and that sort of staff member should be responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, down the line, I just kind of, what I've heard from you is what you're
I think the tourism market participated. People may be tourism so we need to have the whole market ready to go. So if we can, now we've got enough standards, then they'll take that service. So I think this is just a good form of footing. We have to catch those up.
Certification does not exclude volunteers at all. It encourages volunteers as well. So yeah,
I think
Councillor Hayden? Rick Cobble has quite an interesting room with multiple people in it at their visitor information centre. I'm assuming it's an accredited one. I haven't really noticed it there, but they be walking there, there's three or four people often in there, and I think some of them are assisting in, you've got people down in there looking for jobs, and they're just going, oh, we're going through these people down the road, they might be interested. So it's a multi-purpose centre almost, not just an information, tourist information centre. Is that the sort of something that you're looking at, or is that a model that you're...
As far as any sort of user information centre, you cannot stop the person coming in and asking you a question. I know that my history in visitor information centres goes back to 1995 when I used to manage the one in Vail, Colorado, and I still remember a guy walking in and bam, I'm all the way from somewhere in Texas and he told me, there you go, why are you Australian? But some of the questions that you can get asked in those sorts of, once you put that iPhone out, it says potential information and they want to know I think the other thing that's really funny between Yarrawonga and Cobram often is like, what is the white blossom? It's a really standard question within a visitor information centre, so you actually have to know, is the white blossom next range, or is it pictures, or is it persons? What is it? First?
Okay, you've got Council Palmer.
So why do you have to move the building or the information centre into the new building to sell both? Why can't it be accredited where it is?
I think the biggest problem is the location. The whole idea of a visitor information centre is to draw people into your town. But the location, and as I said, I think it's an absolutely beautiful building. Where it is at the moment, it's just gorgeous. The historical, the facade, everything is lovely. But it's not the location that is going to draw people into Cobram. We have to be very careful with location of visitor centres. There's quite a lot of research that will tell you things along the lines of, if you locate a visitor centre on a highway, you will service the town on either end much more so than you will actually service the town that you're trying to stop them at, try and pull them off the highway. Yarrawonga is a really good example. You know where the visitor information centre is in Yarrawonga. And a lot of times in my years with Moira Shire, there were different times afoot to try and get the visitor centre out on the Murray Valley Highway. And the signage for that centre draws people into town. So if you're just a traveller, you could so easily drive past and not have a clue that Lake Norwalo existed. But with that visitor centre drawing people all the way through the town, and then they go, oh my God, look what's at the end of this street. So the location is really, really, really important, and I think that with all of the planning that went into the whole Cobram Foreshore Master Plan, that was what the building was about. It's about
the main floor, having that gorgeous view and things, but also having the visitor information centre so centrally located, that it was going to catch any sort of foot traffic that was going past as well. The centre there where it is at the moment just cannot.
Yarralonga struggles itself. I grew up in Yarralonga, so where it is now, you get a lot of caravans and RVs and things will bypass it because there is not a good parking. And I see that the same, very similar problem where it is now. Caravans, if you don't like to park in caravan spots, which are across bypass. So I see that being going to be a big problem, as well as showcasing like the local market of business and agriculture. There's not going to be any sort of room for that, but there is in the building that currently is there.
Do you mean from a retail perspective?
Yeah.
I sort of would probably steer away from the council being involved in retail. I think it would be difficult for the council to be involved. The current location is that we don't have public toilets there, and also the accessibility. As I say, that's the same, that's a beautiful building, but that restricts us in what we can actually do to that building to increase the accessibility to it, because we cannot put signage on that facade.
My other concern, so that's Hayden, being the cost of the building, the new building itself, taking away the rent from the community fund as it is. I mean, that's a whole shop that could be used for income, that being fund
I suppose my thinking that was really always designed to be a visitor information centre, right from the start. But in the planning council did, it would always be that central shop that was its purpose, was not to be an actual shop or a retail space.
Sorry, Councillor Cornwall and Queen's been waiting patiently.
I was going to say, look, I think it's a good idea for us to have a contemporary modern space. We want to lift the standard of accommodation in our site and let's walk the walk ourselves. I think that's good. I think the location, just during pre-poll when I was outside the library, I had three people asking where the information centre was. So people want it and they want it somewhere in that vicinity. So just, you know, anecdotally, it seems to be a really good idea. In terms of the cost, this is why I asked the information about the money. I understand the rent is $200 and the estimated foregone rent is $150. It seems to me, aside from the salary, that the costings are actually comfortable, if not picked up, that you can use a fund in other locations. So I have to say, like, the entire thing that we go ahead.
Councillor Taylor, just going back to the issue of what might be a little bit of a firestorm potentially, whether we have a view of whether it was a good thing or not, that's what the town did. They moved there. And I'm sort of, I have some discomfort in the idea that we try and go back in before the town itself makes up its mind as to what it wants to do. And maybe they have, and I'm not aware of that, but I can just see, we talk about reputational risk, well, we might have some reputational risk if it turns into an argument. And I think if you were thinking about going down this line, I think we ought to talk to the various parties and try and resolve it.
There's nothing wrong with like us having the accredited one in the new building and then keeping their own little thing happening in the old building. So like that can still function as it is.
I think this is the way it's one of the functions that the centre has done really successfully is doing retail and to focus on some small producers that would never have bothered with a shopfront. And that I would think that it would be a great thing for a visitor centre in the centre of town to say, we've got a great shop down here that does all this regional stuff and focuses on all of our producers in here.
And I think there's one little bit of stuff in it. We didn't have
no.
I'm a bit old school, but I actually don't go to tourist information, but I just do it all online and I'm not even very good at it. So even if we don't go down the path and visit a centre, and look, I'm here or there on that one, so I think the service by one of Berrigan with the BDDA, they said most of Berrigan was actually serviced out of Yarrawonga. Pre-COVID, what happened since then? I'd imagine Baruga's actually serviced a fair bit like Cobram. But I think that digital side of it, or the electronic, we really need to up our game there. But, you know, all my kids were over in Adelaide, you know, no one even mentioned it. Tourism would just pull the iPhone out and hold it all there within seconds.
Mm.
And this recommendation gives us flexibility to do that, doesn't it? It doesn't say
one of my key things is that it's all
That's right. It's not someone just sitting there waiting for visitors to come and see them. They're doing all the productivity behind, doing all the promotion, doing all the...
Well,
that's why Mary's got the second most important job here at the moment.
She's going to find that.
No, we've tried to put it there a couple of times. We don't want to go down there.
So the intent of the recommendation is to engage, as Ian has just said, with a local business, or we're happy with the engagement we've had, to put forward the council's proposal to operate it as a accredited information centre, or we passed that stage already.
This is past that, but I mean, the move of the second can add something along the lines to part three of the recommendation, if they so will, that Councillor Power suggested.
Well, that's sort of a little bit along what I'm thinking of. If there's a bit of local engagement and ownership of what's going on, they have an opportunity to put something
in. Dr. Joe Lutton.
So Rockham Virtual Strategic Planning and Development. I just really want to remind councillors that in terms of the level of engagement that has got us to this point at this time, which is that as the report states, that Marion's actually already worked with and engaged the industry as part of the development and review of the new visitor economy strategy, and that one of the reasons to bring this to council at this point rather than wait until the finalisation of the visitor economy strategy was that there is the visitor economy strategy and will not be completed until April, May, which then means that we will lose the opportunity to support our industry and business, which is what the industry engagement has said, that they really need something now so that they're able to capture the Easter, at least that last trading period of this financial year.
So maybe point three may well be that we engage with the existing operators is into what the models, two models can work hand in hand in going forward, as opposed to trying to engage on that broader. Right. Are we happy with that? Move in a second.
Councillor Payne, to answer the question, what percentage of businesses that you require have you actually discussed with you?
Well, percentage of business is not a specific figure, and that's the percentage that I can tell you. Yeah, well, both folks, and this is the Barooda 40s and Coast Bowl, both the clubs have been spoken to quite commonly. When I spoke to South Small Golf and Golf Club, and they had actually 8 people attend the meeting before, and then at Barooda 40s there was 4, so 2 board members and 2 senior staff members that attended that. I have spoken with representatives from the caravan camping sector, from motels I've engaged with.
Did you talk all 4 towns?
Yeah. Yeah. 3 or 4 different kind of things, 4 or 5, 6 motels, hotels and motels, so including Finlay, Barooda and so small, especially so small around the camping issues and things like that. It's been a really big engagement, and it's something that we actually haven't done before, to be taking the amount of time that it's taken to do and to actually sit down some of the consultations, especially talking to people like Rich Shaw over at Finlay. There's been 2.5 hour conversations that have been really worthwhile.
And just to start,
and we've got really one of the key things that we've worked through the whole time has been what the actual framework that we have in the current tourism strategy, which talks about different roles and responsibilities, and that's where this has come to the fore in every conversation that I've had. But certainly when we get to the stage of doing the actual engagement strategy, I have a list of everybody that I've spoken to, and that will be part of the appendix so that we can see the extent of the consultation that's gone on.
And as you can appreciate, over the last 2 years during COVID, Maryland's had extensive, input with businesses, or I don't know if you got to see any of the stuff that she did online as well. So she's always engaging with the business sector, has done, and obviously the business sector has sent a clear message to Maryland. That's why she's brought this recommendation to us. But now this is what you can do to help us.
Councillor Carter, could I just make just a point in relation to recommendation 1? But maybe if you expanded, where you've got accredited visitor information centre for the whole of the Berrigan Shire area, because then you don't have a contest between what's
to represent the whole of
the area. Because I think unless you make it clear, then I just think that would help.
Yep. Move in a second, have you heard that? And point 3, can you just read that out? Did it go? Did the CEO want a new councillor to engage with that? Councillor Payne? Anybody else interested in that? Councillor Hardy?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be enough, wouldn't it, three? Unless somebody else really wants to, I mean. No, it's okay. So we'll have to add that. Yeah, Meryl will. You'd be able to ring the bell. So, just say that again, that third recommendation.
That's the CEO of the council to engage
Very good. We've had some really good discussion around that. So now I'll put the recommendation. All those in favour? Against? Okay, thank you. Well done. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Matt 7.13, local environmental plan and planning reform. The direction of the council is sought on preparation of the following. A, a submission responding to the discussion paper, new approach to rezoning due 28 February. B, submission responding to infrastructure contribution systems reform due early March. And responding to the Department of Foreign Industry's draft state submitted agricultural land map due 28 January. To note the release of a new environmental plan guideline. Councillor Taylor, do you want to start us off anywhere there? No? Anyone want to start off?
Well, I'm quite happy to raise a couple of questions. I see that there's sort of this streamlined approach that appears to speed things up, or that's hopefully the result, is that right?
Well, so the thing is that they put things all out together.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of, and as they put them out, well, we've had no councillors, so we've had to provide some technical assistance. Now we're asking councillors to share for that, because they've managed to link all of this stuff together, and they're expecting on what is very, it's going to be a really complex matter, and they've put in other complex matters with it.
So do we work back? So do we work back, Joe, and we start on the land agriculture, significant land map for agriculture on the 28th of January? Is that that's what sort of guidance are you looking for there outside of what's already in that?
Do we just start by telling them the time frame is ridiculous? We want more time before we can start.
We can't
do it in time.
You can do that. But if they do come back to us and say,
we don't produce the information, nothing's been achieved.
No, that's right. So we lose that.
It all happens, just given time.
Okay, Joe Ruffin, Director of Strategic Planning and Development. A couple of these are quite time sensitive, and they do have implications for our LEP review. One of them is obviously the agricultural land mapping. We do have the option of just actually saying that we don't have the opportunity and the time to respond to that. But that at the same time too is one that could possibly be done at officer level, where we would just be closely reviewing the mapping and overlaying it with our own existing planning plans. They're very much saying that this at the moment is a webinar is saying they do not know how the Department of Planning is going to use the state significant agricultural land mapping, though the intention is at this stage that by clarifying and identifying state significant agricultural land, that's then likely to provide a framework for council planners and reviews of LEPs to then actually say what activities can actually be prohibited on state significant agricultural land, or what forms of approval will need to be there. That the state significant agricultural land mapping is actually a policy instrument at this stage to give effect to the right to farm policy. But that one is a very, it is one that at a technical level council officers can do and we can progress that and still do a response to if that's the case. The other papers are quite in depth, and I think that is possibly the better option for council officers would be to receive a direction to be able to workshop that with council before we then started to formulate our response.
This is the first
one that's been sent to council. Could I just ask one question about it with the mapping? One of the, we had a motion that was passed some months ago with the previous council about looking at the issue of introducing a rural zone 4 which is still agricultural land. So my question is, and no, you may not be able to answer that, but if we're talking about significant agricultural land, does that in any way restrict us from simply having another zone or greater flexibility with our agricultural land as opposed to not having that flexibility?
There's the risk, Sarah Ruffin, Director of Strategic Planning and Development. That is a question we cannot answer at the moment. The one of the other papers that we would like to actually workshop is a new framework around and a new approach to rezoning. They are looking at whether or not the part of their reform program is actually looking at, as they always do, the definitions of the zonings and rezonings, etc. So it is an unknown space. It could well be very beneficial for our agriculture industry to have our land identified as state significant land, but maybe we would only want the rules. We wouldn't want any land that was zoned largely state as RU4 included in state significant agricultural land, because we wanted to say that the primary, that it's that compatible purpose that we would be looking at.
Well, can I just ask a further question that I think flows from that? That there are many other council areas that have rural zone 4. So if one looked at what they've done with their map and we find any that have rural zone 4, one would assume that it encompasses rural zone 4. And if I might sort of push the barrel a little bit and say, we were set up as an irrigation area, which was for intensive farming. So, to me, having a rural zone 4 in this area is very consistent, as far as the reason that we were actually set up as an irrigation area in the first place.
Look, I think that's certainly the issues that will be canvassed and progressed very quickly through our LEP review and any planning proposals that come from that review to actually rezone land. What we don't know at the moment with the draft mapping that's there, which is being developed by the Department of Primary Industry and not the Department of Planning, is how ultimately that will impact land use. So it is just for us, until we overlay, but for us at this stage is, I think, vitally important that we continue to be engaged in the conversation with the Department of Primary Industry around the state significant agricultural land, that it's not something that we let it fall our radar. The other papers, which are the new approach to rezoning, and that there are a number of changes that are proposed and submissions are actually sought. Those are the types of things that as council officers, Matt and I and Karina, we firmly believe that these are things that possibly need to be worked on, and the council have provided us some guidance as to how they would like us to be responding.
Councillor Hayden? Seeing that having this proposed-driven map, I can just see a huge level of bureaucracy. It's in Victoria now, that sort of stuff already, and it's just going to lose, I think the Shire itself would lose its autonomy on being able to drive some of the comments you're making already, even though it's not perhaps as far as rezoning areas of land at our discretion, and knowing what's going on the ground by having these buggers involved. And that level of bureaucracy, it throws another heap of problems. That's where I'm seeing that would be my concern. Victoria have already got some of that rezoning based on government, so just put an overlay map over where you're proposing to develop, and they just say, well, this is this land and that's that land, It's all based out of Melbourne. Mm. They have no idea what's going on there. I think they guys going to be more in the rule and have some issues with it.
Well, I've got the same way Ted's got, but look, the legal people, I've read this. What is SSAL? The draft SAL map is derived from existing statewide information that is the most relevant characteristics related to the best. Agriculture land are used for biophysical attributes. SAL represent the most capable, fertile, productive agricultural land.
Give me a headache already.
Yeah, it's just a bit of waffle. They're sold out for lunch. It's what? Well, it is. It's telling me. I've got no idea what they're talking about. where it's going or whatever else. I really need a lot more information before I can settle on too much of this.
We've already got the habitat planning sort of driving some of this agenda already. I mean, it's a time, we've already talked about the lack of timing and allowing us to develop that a little bit as well. So I can just see big conflicts coming along.
Can we push back on the 28th?
Right?
No.
Would you
allow
that? Would you
allow
that? We can certainly indicate that, but the process will continue.
But would council allow for us to
And when have we got an opportunity of habitat planning actually being in their interest? Can they come and help us in a workshop, or can they come and address us when we workshop the other two items?
Well, we're meeting with David on Zoom tomorrow. He's pretty keen to come meet the council, so I would be requesting that you could probably come to the February meeting.
Okay, and then we could workshop that at the February meeting as well. I mean, we're stacking up the February meeting, but which is about 2 days before
or is it better to bring into the strategic and policy?
If you look at one of their criteria is soil pH. Well, the only one's got the record of all the soil pHs around the buried entire. Few copies might have a few things, but no one correlates. So you just have
to make one up.
I think
one of the reasons why it's problematic. Local representatives and Helen Dalton or somebody like that to point out that some of these expectations are unreasonable. Since we've been right up behind getting all the elections done, the cables all put everything back. I really don't like how that reads, and I can just see how we're going to get into awful trouble because they've just pushed it through and
Can we do that?
I'll be keen to send it to Steph as well, just so that we've got a balance. Well, Sue's at the state, so. Because we're going to get some stuff thrown at us here because you've had the opportunity and you've had the talk today.
You just don't know what's coming.
That's it.
I think, council mayor, the thing I hear the most is that they're only considering fire essential things to that. That's very subjective, because what you could do with the land and what you could do with the land is close to this. You might not need fine land to run food laws, but you need the land surround it. So how can you dictate online what is significant from the fire
infrastructure? That's right. And that's been worked out by somebody in the city office?
Yeah.
Looking at it.
I can look on the map now from state entries.
All right, does somebody want to move a recommendation for us here?
I'm happy for us to move that we try and get the date agreed aligned, if you like, and push and you write our appropriate letters or engage who we need to. Could I also suggest that is it Ramrock or one of your other board members, Ramdale or whatever the hell what they call now, is
We engaged them to write a letter with the state. Because I think you really get a bit more of a broader Shire pushback, not just us.
Can I suggest that we write to the Secretary of the Department and perhaps fax a letter written copy to the police?
And perhaps the State Minister.
Councillor Taylor, maybe we need to have a plan B if they don't give us time.
Director of Strategic Planning and Development. Councillor McKean, will you name the Secretary of the Department of Planning and also the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture as it relates to the state's existing agricultural land?
The primary industries in terms of the one that most of the problem, but I don't see any reason why we shouldn't write to the secretaries of all the relevant departments that are trying to brush things through.
Bring them in the room.
Yep.
All right. So you're happy to move that, Councillor Hayden? Seconded, Councillor Cornwall on the phone. Any further discussion? If not, I'll put the recommendation. All those in favour? Against? That carries. Thank you. Items of noting, recommendation that items of noting 8.1, 8.13, inclusive be received and noted. Can I have a move and a seconder? Councillor Taylor, second Councillor Marriott. Item 8.1, Risk and Audit Improvement Committee. Any questions? Obviously, we've spoken at length about that at the last meeting. Briefing. 8.2, Council Induction and Professional Development Program. Well, we understand now that we can meet with the CEO to plan that out, so we just need to individually do that. And obviously, there's a tool for the bus. 8.3, CEO Performance Agreement Quarterly Report. One thing to note here is that we did see that staffing was an issue before we appointed our CEO, and we've been able to secure significant staff.
We're still pretty short though of staff.
Regional Banking Task Force, obviously we put a submission in there, and interestingly enough, that someone from Finley tried to tell me yesterday that the National Bank was closed. So our journalist from Sydney just got a little email to say that you may well like to investigate these claims. Haven't got any substantial evidence, however, the bank went in and put some pressure on them because
that's in there, you said.
Yeah. And that's what happened there, didn't they? Right. Rumour, and next minute their team will close. Ranjo Annual Performance Statement. So it's generally the mayor and or CEO or representative on those committees that then sort out the information, obviously, from their network. Because this is a forum where mayors and CEOs meet. And it's something I think we should probably investigate further going forward, whether or not Statutory we can do that.
Well, I tended to put
I think what Councillor Marriott is saying is going out further again to the actual industry and saying, you know, Well, if we're going to talk about agriculture and water, why haven't we got Ted Hatter as the president of SRI, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, we have engaged intensively with that water division paper, it was engaged across the sector. So in the freight, I think that was old mate from Hay, the CEO of Hay. Is he in the freight one?
What?
I can't even name. David Webb, that's right. David Webb, yeah, correct. Well, he's an old mate. Sorry, David. But, yeah, so, and there again, industry providers, obviously, you know, the transport companies, I haven't been involved in that one, but I'm sure that that's the program that they would go down. What we're actually going to do in the next term is, because we had like 7 or 8 pillars there, we're going to try and concise them because obviously they're time intensive, labour intensive and financially intensive as well. So the CEO can spend all the time doing that, or he can spend all the time, you know, advocating as well on behalf of what actually councils want. So it probably looks like we did all get asked for our priorities going forward, and I think mine from this obviously was water, was digital connectivity, and what was the third one? I was trying to think. Yeah, energy, that's right, yeah. Because there again, I think number one was probably the digital connectivity, because we've got plenty of, as you would understand, you know, you're out on the farm and now you're in that good when the wind's blowing from the south or whatever, and it's not real good when it's coming from the north. And we've got people that are trying to export product, you know, whether it's in small intensity or whether it's, you know, high. So,
yeah, we're trying to run a multi-million-dollar business with internet that doesn't allow us to do what we need to do.
No, that's right. So that's, yeah. No. We can feed the information in, definitely, but as in the past, our representation from this council has been on the water and the energy section. Well, I was on both. I was on the water one predominantly, and Rowan was on the energy one, and I'm suggesting that when we go again, that you know, we can bring people in and therefore also have those conversations around the, you know, how do individual councils feed that information up into that working group? Yeah. And that's, yeah, again, that's whatever we want to put into it, the time we want to put into it, as opposed to, you know, because it's like that water position paper, that, like Chris Bilkey drove that, and we workshopped it 4 or 5 times here in our council chambers to start. We got consultants to come in and work through it with us, just to prioritise what was there. Got feedback from the councils as well, obviously, you know, different tries. So, yeah, it's all about what effort we want to put into actually having, And it has been reviewed again, and I wasn't at that meeting, because I'm happy to engage Councillor Bilkey going forward to come over and give us a presentation around that, because obviously that's something that he's driven and he's got a lot of expertise around it. So if that's something that we would like to do, I'm definitely happy to engage. He's not back yet, I've tried to ring him a few times, but we have a meeting on the 25th of February, so after that we can have those discussions.
But we are just as well.
we leave and we've had an energy that we felt strategies through that program as well, so that we've got a powerful account of the neutral and positive space as well. So just, there has been some really good outcomes.
And urban waste is extremely important too. That's probably going to be our second or third or first major priority. Yeah. 8.6. And yeah, again, if I can't attend a Renzo meeting, well then you have voting rights and be able to attend those executive meetings. So concerning when we're talking about water, maybe I'm not available. I'll give you more than 24 hours notice. 8.6, lodgement of written returns of interest. So let's just send that information out for us. Seven, local roads and community infrastructure. We did talk about that the other day.
So this is making an interest to you. Just bringing it to the council, in terms of the last meeting previous council, given the time and the space that were required. These are the five projects that the council has chosen for the meeting. Having said that, up until start working on council swap and pay, you can just remember that it's actually a bit of work to go ahead and put together the plans and planning, especially as they all need to be 35, 30, 10, 22. It has a lot of time from the start of the greenfield plant club. So these are the five we've chosen. Previous council chose.
You mean you can't choose in front of the
By all means, Councillor Hayley, if you think that one of them is not particularly suitable, then you have an opportunity in a window to make a change. But if you're choosing something else that we haven't even started looking at or planning, it's going to be tight to get us something that saves the money by being 2023. You don't have to make a decision tonight, it's just letting you know that you're here. And if you talk to your community or whatever and they say you're a team manager, it's your idea, well.
So we can start with a new list of those next.
Well, that's one of the things we're going to start to do, and maybe we can do some of that work in March at November. Is that okay? What's our next little list of in the economic infrastructure projects that we want to try to identify and scope up?
Chair Robson, Director of Strategic Planning and Development. Yes. We are due to have a review of the Council's Community Strategic Plan and undertake a full engagement with the community in relation to that. There'll be a report presented to Council about the review process, both for reviewing the current strategic plan by 30 June and the process that will be followed, and that will most likely also include a recommendation that a more extensive community engagement process will be conducted shortly thereafter in the first quarter of the next financial year, so that we can then start to identify and engage directly with the community on the types of priorities that they have for community infrastructure, economic infrastructure and environmental protections, and the types of issues that they would like to work with council on, and the governance processes that would be in place for the community to work with council on the implementation of the community strategic plan. So that's actually quite a detailed process from which we should be able to start to identify a lot of those processes and get a little a priority as well as to how we start to progress those and the amount of work that's involved. So that's once every 4 years, once every 5 years process that we actually undertake, in addition to the types of
engagement that Marion's just started as part of the review of the visual economy. So there certainly will be a very formalised process to start to get the community's priorities going forward again.
Electoral funding obligations for left men. So, Yeah, that's a political donation. The less expenditure you can't actually do until up to June 3rd.
No,
there's
that. I've been giving you that.
That's for political donations. That's not for election.
You've still got to send it back and say, nil if you've got nil.
Yeah, no, I've done it. I'm just saying that I tried to upload my electoral expenditure and it's saying you can't do it until after 30 June.
We'll be fine too.
Even just as a normal councillor, you've got to tell
them. Yeah, you've got nothing. Yeah, we'd say you spend time filling out these forms and you've got nothing on them, but if you don't send them back,
so there's a nil disclosure in that electoral stuff. I'm sure Roger knows where it is. He'll help you out. 8.9, 2021 audit management letter. Just there again. Obviously, we understand why the rule fires are high on the agenda, but we're about one of 80 or 100 councils that are the same. There you go. 8.10, 2022-23 rate peg. Well, we understand how disappointing that is. That's probably... can't push it back at the Calder, but we can definitely push it back at LG, New South Wales.
And you are on all of them on it.
Yeah.
And I don't think we necessarily need to have it as a new item on tape for a
reference. No, that's right. 8.11 development termination. Sorry, councillor.
Look, I think there are a couple of opportunities that we have. We generally, in the past, tend to stay away from things that could be regarded as us making a political statement. But there are a couple of opportunities that we can look at going forward where we could really provide some quite in-depth information to the community around the rate peg and its implications for our budget. And that could be if we, when the council actually produces its draft budget, it then wants to actually provide suggestions to the community on how the budget's been constructed and our income streams, and that we could start to look at providing additional opportunities where you can actually have a one-on-one conversation and actually explain the rate peg and how that works. So there are a couple of options that certainly if we're wanting to go down the path of more than just providing the information through our council bulletins, etc., but a little bit more in-depth engagement and providing the resources for our community to be able to start to understand the implications of that for our budget, then that is certainly something that we'd be more than happy to put in part of the integrated planning and reporting process about how we then engage the community.
And further to that, there's an expectation now from the community that we have an endless supply of money that will set the standard of implementing infrastructure, and even our 355 communities are coming back on a more regular basis saying, can you do this? I mean, Baruga, Swan & Kate, you know, wants to spend $1.6 million or whatever just to, you know, but understanding that because we do the process that now we deliver the infrastructure, well, it's been okay when the governments have been throwing the money around, but when you have a 0.9% rate, doesn't give you much at all. There will be no disposable money. Yeah, and it'll get mentioned in the mayor's report, but that'll obviously defer to what they're talking about. The more in depth stuff is something that we can do.
Don't forget the average rate payer out there from the family rates.
No, that's right.
Not
right.
Going way too
much. Well, I think the next thing on the flip side of council is while council will struggle with an 0.9% rate increase on top of everything else that council has to do. Your average rate payer increase may also be struggling. We have done an excellent job in our community with this rate payment of debate, and basically worked very hard with them in terms of encouraging them to make the payments that they can, including the work, and that's worked very well. But that doesn't mean it's not, even though we've got low outstanding rates, it doesn't mean they're not struggling.
Often it's been mentioned to me that especially big rate holders, you know, they should get, you know, they've inquired about a discount when if they pay in full, as in as opposed to installments. You know, like there's some rate payers that obviously pay, you know, excess of up to close to $100,000 in rates in this side. But anyway.
Just in relation to the special rate variation, that the requirements are that we actually need to incorporate it as part of the community strategic planning process. So if we were looking at either the time frame that Matt's talking about, or we have missed that for to get a successful special rate variation application together for even for 2023-24.
I think there's more education needed on how valuation of properties affects their rates rather than the peg. The peg you hit with the valuation of some farms like 3%. We're all jumping around just the actual peg doesn't vary so much as how it individually affects them.
But it's just because your property's increased 20% doesn't mean your rates are 20%. Mm. It depends how it's increased in relativity to the other increases people in the rate category. And it is quite complex, and we'll need to do when it comes closer to time to take a lot for the 2023, we'll probably need to talk to the council as a whole just about how it actually
have a discussion over lunch. 8.11 development presentation for the month of November. There was a question out of the last council meeting about pushing that statutory back out to that statutory requirement of 40 days.
Yep.
Is that because of lack of access to our consultant, or is it because of...
It's just the workload. Yep. The workload is so big at the moment that setting an unrealistic time frame that we used to do about 2 weeks turnaround,
that is just unrealistic at the moment, given that number that's going through 40 days to be out.
Okay, so the question being, we've got Matt Yeoman, is he still our consultant, is he?
He's still with this, where on some of the issues, he's still
so he's not directly engaged as a super consultant.
Look, we still have Matt Yeoman's actually taking a bit of a leave at the moment from habitat training, but that's for about the next 4 to 5 weeks. But our planning and building team still have access to getting consulting support for the issues that they're actually unfamiliar with. It's still very much at a developing stage, the planning and building team.
So let's use, say, subdivisions for an example, or are we getting that to the 40 days, or is it extenuating past the 40 days? I mean, we've made comments that obviously, we're in an environment where, and I was speaking to the real estate agency the other day, and I said, is the market cool? She said, the market has a tool. But as long as our subdivision stuff is getting through in that 40 days, well then,
I think that's probably why we're having the internal discussion about the value of the report that we're giving to council. This report doesn't provide where we're sitting in terms of the benchmarks that are set by the state in terms of processing time.
Because, if you have a look just for an example, that 10-lot subdivision in Lawson Drive, it was submitted on a third of an oil.
Yes.
That's more than 40 days.
No,
I realise that. Matt explained that to us the other day, that more information stops the process and it very engages. But as Joe said, we look at that, new councils look at that, I look at that and we had someone ring us up and go, where's our development application? It's been sitting on the desk and has it moved to the bottom now? You know what I mean? So what I'm saying is that, if that's the issue, well then we can inform our constituents with that, but that doesn't tell me that that's been done within 40 days.
No, and that's why we want to review this report and the information that's being provided, because one of the things that I was fairly clear about when I first walked in, I said that report doesn't provide me with the information that I need.
No.
To know how we're needing benchmarks, and the question really is, if the council officers work on developing a report that starts to identify what the benchmarks are which are established and whether we're meeting those, is that the information that the council will...
And that's acceptable, even just as a dashboard at the meeting to say, okay, anything that's overtime there and a reason why, and the rest of it, we don't need to know it because it's in that 40-day statistic. That's just what I'll be thinking anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of what we want.
Yeah, so reporting the quiet section that will sort of argue to where we're not
going
to appear to be. Yeah.
I don't think we've missed any of that for a long time. So it's just that it looks like that sometimes, and people do call and say, oh, it's been there for 3 months, but we're waiting for the bodies to get back to us.
But I suppose what we get as council is we get that, submitted in September, and it still hasn't been determined until February, and it's not going to be determined until the 19th of February, or the 20th of February, which is our early meeting, and we're going, well, okay, well, that's because the statutory time stopped then, and then the 40 days started again after we re-engaged again. That's the hard part that we need to be able to have the discussion with the developers. So, 8/12, 21/22 rate collections and outstanding debtors, second quarter report. So, as Matt said, our rates department have, if they're not state recognised as in what they do, then they wouldn't be far off because our collections are pretty much top of the range, aren't they?
For the
for the Ombudsman about it, and I want to be able to get certainly that probably can't stop. Coming to the hand of the not getting in touch with them early and helping my plan. What may be.
I said, and development determination for the month of September.
Yeah.
Oh, don't start me on swimming pools. I think that's about 520 something. Now, well, anyway, the good thing about it is we're all logged now, so that helps. All those in favour of items and items? Against that carried? Okay, item 9 committees, we haven't had any. Realistically, item 10, Mayor's report, so sorry.
So, Councillor Mayor, if I was between the last meeting and this meeting, just please be made through the art committee.
As you said, you're a representative of Bria.
As a representative of council, working through what someone pointed out, why I'm here, and I thought that was a bit in here. Even though it's not, but it's in here.
Yeah, well, it would be perceived, that's correct. We have a couple of legal eagles around the table. No, I'm joking. I would say under
$2,000 here or $4,000 there, this sort of effort.
So, in a simple sense, the decision about whether you have a cluster or not is one to get a money. It doesn't come from the wall from. Again, it comes down to the closeness of the relationship in some ways. It comes down to the nature of the conflict. It comes down to the role of the role it might actually play in actual decision making as a advisor. It's got the need to make a call on the line, it's something to make a call on. But it could simply be just taking the relationship, could be a different way of dealing with it.
You're not going to be making any decisions about probably issues or anything like that. So,
probably more the relationship we have than that is what we're looking for.
No. I just didn't try to make someone to talk to me.
No.
It's not a formal committee, though.
That's the point. While the relationship might be close, there's the decision-making
of the committee is pretty low, so you
need
to sort of...
I suppose we can fast-track
this
and say, are you comfortable being on that committee or not?
Yes, I
want to be on that, but I don't know. Okay, right. Right, okay. Well, that clears that up pretty quickly. Anybody else interested in being on there? Because obviously, you know, as soon as there's a decision to be made, you'll have to remove yourself from the room. But if there's somebody that would like just for information, or we're just happy for Julia to be there with the information stream, then... Councillor Cornwall Clean, I shouldn't have...
That's okay. Could I make a suggestion? The reason that we wanted to have a councillor there was about the supportive relationship.
Mm.
So if we had some other arrangement whereby a councillor, as is the person with the relationship with supportive, yep, take it away from the swimming pool committee, that might work.
Hmm.
Well, we're developing an MOD with 40 myself and Bobby anyway, to keep those, so that can't be...
So maybe at this point, we remove Councillor Marriott from the delegation to the ARC, and in the MOU with the Bruger Sport Club, we ask if they would like a council representative or conduit between those two organisations. That's fair enough, because you're all, you don't want to put in that position, so. I did it, forgot about that. Yeah, that's right, especially in the way between Hart and Bruger. Item 10 is the Mayor's report. This will be in two parts. This will be when I was the Mayor and when I was just a ceremonial Mayor. As the Deputy CEO often pointed out. So on the 19th, we attended the Rando board meeting, a farewell dinner for those retiring councillors, and unfortunately, obviously one of our retiring board members was Norm Brennan. His funeral is on this Friday. Unfortunately, I can't attend. I'm away, but I have passed on my condolences to the family and anybody that wishes to attend. Obviously, it's in the gardens in Dunedin at 11 o'clock Friday. what are those gardens called again, Karina? Wearing Gardens, that's right. So anybody that's interested in that is quite welcome. So on the 23rd, we had the meet the councillors night in Finley, the rec reserve, that most of us were there, which was a great initiative from the Finley Chamber of Commerce. And I think, you know, there's definitely room for that forum to continue on outside the election, so that we actually go into the rest of the communities and continue to inform the communities who we are. And because I think it's in our own interest as well to raise the profile of who we are, and also to, you know, give us that opportunity for the councillors, other community to have that one-on-one with us. But we can work that out at the corporate workshop, how we want to structure that. 29th, I said that the AGM for the Rec Reserve at Bruga. So, wasn't that day. No, we just met, correct? You and I met with past members of the Bruga Rec Reserve, sorry. On the 30th, we've got a mental health group that we touched on at the strategy meeting, and we reconvened just before the mental health night that we held on the 1st of December at the RSL Club, where Seth Cook brought down some clinicians that were obviously able to talk in the different places that they work in. So there was representatives from Headspace, there was representatives from the Primary Health Network, there was representatives from Murrumbidgee Local Health, and it was just an awareness night for people that wanted to attend to understand what services are actually out there. That is something, a partnership that we'll work with going forward. We've had a little bit of a lull, obviously, you know, during the Christmas period, but I was speaking to, the unofficial chair, I suppose, Jane, the other day about reconvening, and has indicated your interest to join that group too, so she will get in contact with you, I'm sure. 3rd of December, myself, Karina and Rowett attended the Cobham Baruga Golf Entertainment opening, which again was great, actually, because we had the Cross Border Commissioner there, which was awesome, and him being able to articulate, you know, the issues that obviously our communities have had, but also the expertise in what Baruga has been able to do, and they're becoming the envy of clubs up and down the Murray, actually, the amount of funding they've been able to attract, and hence obviously, Tokemoor Golf and Bowling Club wanting to sign an MOU as well and going forward, because Baruga now has set the standard of being able to attract funding to improve their visitor experience. And on the 16th, this is again ceremonial, opening of the West Creek in Tokemoor and the new museum, and we had some dignitaries obviously came there. We had Susan Lee and Tom Golden, and also members of the RAP. So there was about 20 members of the RAP, I reckon, and it was a really good event. Again, understanding and just take time and go for a walk down there and have a look at that RAP Creek walk, because it's in Tokemoor, obviously just opposite the school. And just to even read some of the stuff that, you know, that
to watch the women from RAF actually,
yeah,
they were just so proud.
Yeah, they were.
And modern to women in RAF, they were really, really.
Because I'm pretty sure our consultant said that there's one other acknowledgement of the women's participation in the RAF, pretty much. I don't know if it was in the state or in the country. So.
One of the ladies pointed out that there's more statues and memorial things to animals in Australia than there are to women.
We don't intend to finish it. That's where we're at the moment. And obviously the Tokemoor Museum, most of us probably been there. The great work Matt and Karen are doing and their team, and it just seems to be going. So that's my mayoral and ceremonial mayoral report. You don't have to move the ceremonial stuff. Council Marriott, all those in favour, against carried. We can go around the delegates' reports, but I'm suggesting there's not going to be a lot there, other than those that maybe attended the... Yeah, I can talk about the delegates' reports. So the delegates' reports, and they often, this gets a little bit clouded, but the delegates' reports are those of your delegates too. So as you know, staff or Sydney Rep Reserve or whatever, come back, report That's your diving report. That's different to business arising. Okay, so then business arising will be stuff that Councillor Cornwall has been asking about the other day. So that can be stuff that we've either talked about at the strategy and policy meeting, or it's been on the agenda and it's been on the past agendas, and we can definitely have those conversations around that. Sorry? No, I'm saying things that we've discussed after we've been implemented from the pre-W.
So they should be something from a previous council as well.
Yes.
As part of our role, we've got different organisations. We've got 355 groups. Okay. I had a meeting with the Tokemo pool there the other day.
Okay, there you go. So
So that might be a traffic committee in the old days and has risk meetings and so on, so it comes to that. Now it's only the traffic committee, I think, that comes to that. They make recommendations to council for them to make them know what they're about. Changing the improvement of somewhere or something.
Don't have any calls. Councillor Carr, Councillor Fine, Councillor Ralston, Councillor Cornwall Green, Councillor Moore, Councillor Haddie.
Well, there you go. I'm totally unprepared. I had a meeting with the Tokemo Swimming Pool fortunately, Green has already chatted with them around some of the issues they were having with their pumps.
Yep.
And some of their stormwater removal, I suppose it is. There's some issues there, apparently, which are also probably that's been chatted about as well. So they were also chatting about some of the improvements that they were hopeful of doing and funding behind what needs to happen there. Perhaps I can pass over to Karina or Matt about what some of the discussions they've had.
I'll just make sure that they're the same.
They have to climb over things to turn the pump on and off. It's a bit crazy.
So they need to get that addressed. They've got some, they want to do some work with solar power. So we'll talk about that, what may or may not be possible there in terms of getting funds for that work. The bore, there's some work that needs to be done around the bore. We've completed about 3/4 of the job. We just need to finish that off. And stormwater, I need to have another look at that one. We might talk to you about that one. It's more over the area, but yeah, there's stormwater issues that we can have. With all our 355 committees, we'll be writing to them very soon.
Very sharp, very written.
That's problematic in itself, because last year, or the term before, last term, there's a lot of those communities got that stuff after the time is flat, so we need to get on that earlier rather than later. Is that what you
think? Just an addition to that was that because some of the thoughts and processes were needed to have other funding other than perhaps what council might be interested in. The talk was to engage Emma, I think.
Emma and Merrin
just to inform the that committee, and I believe others as well, about potential funding opportunities so that they're in the loop, because otherwise a lot of them don't have just inviting them and perhaps what to look for.
I'm Sarah Ruffin, Director of Strategic Planning and Development. Certainly, the process really is with our committees is that we will continue to ask for those sorts of contributions. Ideas about what they would like assistance and funding for, but we actually want to get to a point where we start to move all of our committees to a point where they have a 4 or 5 year strategic plan, and so that then when the requests are coming through on that annual basis, the committee might then be at that point of raise sufficient funds for their contribution, and the matching one is that then that's actually starting to be incorporated into our integrated planning process. So we've sort of got two sort of processes running alongside, because we've really only got the Baruga Recreation Reserve strategy, and at this point, which will have a number of projects, etc., and we're now starting to move through that. So that's just explaining, councillors, that yes, if you're a delegate to a committee, we're going to start working through so that there's a planned forward plan. That won't stop committees being able to come up, but with their projects, and we will continue to ask, but we're wanting to sort of start to have a bit more of an informed conversation, I think, with our committees about the timing of their requests for the committees into the budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was certainly the feeling I had from our meeting, that they were... needs some direction, if you like, as to okay, put some thought into what Joe was saying about okay, what is it we really want? How do we want to go about doing it? Perhaps get a list of things, priorities, because as funding grants and all the like come through, it's not necessarily available for that, but it might be suitable for something else over here that we.
Well, the health plan, if we know what everyone else is, I'll let the top council manage your long term financial plans if we have some understanding.
We do need to keep moving. The photographer I did see was there 20 minutes ago, and I've never done a fashion shoot, but I don't think that they take very good photos when you hold them up, so we need to keep moving. Is it important?
No, it's not really, no. I've just been in this role.
Is there anything else you want to add there, Councillor Hattie?
No, that's pretty much covered roughly.
Yeah, of course it's important.
Any business arising around the table, first of all?
I've just got one. Obviously, we're about to sign an MOU with Tokemoor Golf and Bowls Club, but they've requested a letter of support to go into the Building Better Region Fund application that they're applying for their, it's called a dry future redevelopment plan for the Tokemoor Golf and Bowls Club. Karina will normally get you an email, send you around that. It's an extensive document. It has 28 pages of redevelopment and what the old looks like and what the new potentially looks like. It's quite exciting, but I don't have all your emails, so I don't
know. It's in the February meeting because the MOU is just about ready to sign. I just want to check what you guys want to send it.
Anybody else?
Just like to thank the council that you all sponsored the Show and Shine on Sunday at Berrigan, and it was a magnificent success. I worked out that we did the books last night, going to make about 18 or 20 grand out of it. So,
oh, wow.
And there was thousands of people. It was unbelievable. The council put up about 6 grand as advertising.
Well, maybe there's 20 there, they won't need 6 grand next year. Careful what you report. No, of course.
We fight honesty always first, Matt.
No, that's correct.
That's what
council
does,
what it does. So you can get operate the same right at after 3 years too, correct?
Yeah,
we've
had our 3 years. The people that came from so far away.
Okay, I'll close the meeting at 12:30. Thank you for the attendance and...